Okay, so what I want to talk about today is an old problem, and that is to describe how you might model gas dynamics if you want to go beyond the Navier-Stokes approximation. What I'm going to describe isn't necessarily tied to the Boltzmann equation, but is tied to any general class of kinetic equations. And in fact, it actually is much more general than what I'm going to talk about today. I'll just keep it relatively simple so that maybe it's clear what's going on. So I want to consider a kinetic equation of this very simple form with a collision operator, epsilon's the Knudsen number. And fluid dynamics, of course, is the regime where Knudsen is small. Now, what I'm going to assume about C is it respects Galilean symmetry, locally conserves mass, momentum, and energy, and dissipates entropy. And I'll just review this really quickly. If I have a vector of things conserved by C, mass, momentum, and energy, and what conserved by C means that if I, this bracket means integrate over V, and if I integrate over V against any F, I should get zero from the collision operator. So if I multiply the kinetic equation by this E and integrate the whole equation, you recover these local conservation laws, like so. So similarly, if I define eta to be F log F minus F, and I take its derivative, multiply C by it, and integrate, then I get something with a sign. This, of course, is Boltzmann's, the key behind Boltzmann's famous H theorem. And so if I just multiply the whole kinetic equation by eta prime, which is otherwise known as the log of F, and integrate it, like so, you get something with a sign on this side and a divergence on this side, and that expresses the dissipation of entropy. Here, of course, I'm talking about kinetic entropy, which has minus the sign and equilibrium of thermodynamic entropy. We'll just accept that convention here. And the important thing about the H theorem is there's a nice characterization of equilibria that this dissipation rate for the entropy vanishes if and only if F actually, put in the collision operator, annihilates as an equilibrium of the collision operator. And then, of course, that means F must have the form of a Maxwellian, like so, where the rho, the u, and the theta can depend on x and t. This is only operating on the v variable, all of this. And the rho, now, I introduced this, this is the rho bold vector as opposed to the rho unbold vector. It's not so clear from up here. I hope it's clear from the back in the room. But this vector is the vector of all the conserved densities, like so. All right, so how to view fluid dynamic closures? Well, in fluid dynamic limits, you're always going to be, or in regimes, you're always going to be near local equilibrium. So what I'll do is decompose the kinetic density in terms of its local equilibrium plus a deviation. And this is just given by the formula as before, where the moments are given, that's the bold, by that formula there. And you see that then, all the fluid moments are tied up in the local equilibrium, and the fluid moments of the deviation are always zero. Okay, so now if you go back to the local conservation law, what you see is the evolution of these conserved densities is given by this term here, which is exactly the terms of the compressible Euler equations, plus this term here associated with the deviation, which of course corresponds to how much you're missing the compressible Euler equations are by. And therefore, specifying this F tilde really is what the business of fluid dynamic closures are all about. Okay. So if you turn this into more standard coordinates, then you see that this F tilde contributes to exactly two terms, a matrix term P tilde, traceless matrix, traceless symmetric matrix, given by the moment of F tilde with a traceless symmetric matrix A, shown here, and the heat flux Q tilde, which is a moment of F tilde with B, which is a vector-valued quantity here, And these depend on U, and in this case theta, this only depends on U. All right, so it was Maxwell who first argued that you get fluid regimes when he didn't talk about Newton numbers, obviously. In fluid regimes, when mean free paths are short, F should be near the local equilibrium. And he observed that if you just set F tilde equal 0, you get the compressible Euler system out. And the observation I want to make here is that these things, if you just take the F log F term, the kinetic entropy, and integrate it, evaluate it at local equilibrium, that quantity is exactly dissipated. Well, formally it's conserved by the Euler approximation. And this is a theme we'll come back to. So if you're going to do better than the Euler approximation, you have to be smarter about the deviation than merely setting it to 0. So, but you can write down from the kinetic equation an exact equation that the deviation must satisfy that couples it with the local equilibrium. All right, and so let me explain the characters in this equation. P tilde is kind of new. P tilde is actually identity minus P. Both of these are projections. This projection is simply obtained by taking the moments of the function it's operating on and multiplying it by the gradient of E with respect to the boldface rho. So this operation is a projection is a fairly trivial thing to check. And in fact, there are orthogonal projections over the, both of them are orthogonal projections over the L2 with weight 1 over the Maxwellian. Okay, now Maxwell again is the first to argue that what you could do is, let's go back to the deviation equation, and what he says is, look, these deviations are small. Therefore, on this side of the equation, these terms I can neglect relative to this term. And on this side, what you should do is linearize. Well, he had a quadratic collision operator he was dealing with, and so linearization was pretty trivial. He just killed the quadratic terms in the fluctuation. And when you write that in other words, Maxwell argues that F tilde is approximated by this guy, where you've taken just this term from the left-hand side and the linearized term from the right-hand side. And remember, he didn't have an epsilon staring at him. He didn't, to make this, to try and argue this one way or the other, but this is what he did. And he observed that this yields the compressible Navier-Stokes system, which of course was known at the time, but not too old. All right, and its solutions formally dissipate the Euler entropy as well. That's the thing to observe. In other words, if I multiply by the derivative of the Euler entropy, the Navier-Stokes equations, you get the Euler entropy here. This is this term is the Euler entropy flux. You get a new term which is conservative, a divergence term, plus you get this term which actually has a sign. It's the good sign. Okay, now, if you want to go beyond Navier-Stokes, this has been the subject of quite a bit of work over the years. The traditional approaches are either the Hilbert expansion or the Chapman-Enskog expansion. And I find neither of these satisfactory. There's a litany of reasons for making this statement. So I'm going to propose something completely different that really involves three approximations, one of which is an expansion. So the first thing I'm going to do is something which isn't a linearization. Linearization makes a lot of sense when you're linearizing about an exact solution. But keep in mind that the linearization, you're not linearizing about an exact solution of the equation. The local equilibrium is not. And so there's no reason to be slavish to just doing a linearization in a traditional sense. And so this is a kind of linearization, and I offer it for your consideration. Once I've done that, and this, then I'm going to do something called the material frame stationary balance approximation, which is a temporal approximation. Basically, this will be a kind of relaxation approximation, going from here to here is, I believe, quite on firm ground, although I have no theorems at all. Okay, and then that will be a temporal approximation. To make a spatial approximation, I will do an expansion, which is in small gradients, and this will yield a hierarchy of systems, and every one of these approximations maintains some kind of entropy dissipation. In fact, these last two actually dissipate the Euler entropy, like the Navier-Stokes. Okay, so what's the small deviation approximation? Well, what I do is, instead of keeping, so I still linearize this side, just like Maxwell would have done, but on this side, instead of just keeping this term, otherwise I'd be back at Navier-Stokes, I keep something of the derivatives. Now, what do I mean, something of the derivatives? What I'm keeping seems to be a more complicated thing, but I actually claim it's simpler. And the reason I claim it's simpler is because the way I view this derivative operator, I mean the derivative operator from the other side, from the original fluctuation equation, is I can decompose it in the terms that are symmetric and skew-symmetric with respect to the natural weight of the problem, which is the 1 over the equilibrium weight. And when I do that, I choose to keep now the symmetric part as the leading order, claiming that the other part is lower order. Now, I'll observe that the other part would just have a minus sign here, and it doesn't take too much in your head calculation to see that the derivatives of f exactly cancel then, and all you have is a multiplicative operator that is multiplying derivatives of the local equilibrium. So what I'm, the assumption I'm making here when I keep just this part is an assumption that derivatives of f can be on scales smaller than the derivatives of the local equilibrium. That is to say, they can be steeper gradients in the little f. And so I keep these terms and the structure by keeping this way. Now, it's quite remarkable, but this system that I've written down, now remember, this couples with the conservation law. So this you consider coupled with the equation for the row, the boldface row. And that coupled system actually has an exact entropy formally, and here it is. It's, again, the Euler entropy here. Here's the Euler entropy flux. Here's a term which is, except for the fact that this is the small deviation approximation, this is exactly the Navier-Stokes term. And now you get a time derivative of something quadratic in the deviation. So you can see now this allows some variation in the entropy to being, from being a little bit away from equilibrium. And then you get a flux term, and then you get exactly the same dissipation term as before. It's formally the same, except you understand that this is a different F tilde than before, so it's not really the same. Okay, now one can understand that equation very simply. I mean, this isn't so magical. What's happening is, if I look at the exact entropy relation, here's the density, here's the flux, here's the dissipation rate, and I expand the things through second order in the deviation. So in the first, for the densities, the linear term in the deviation identically annihilates because the derivative, the eta prime, is proportional to the conserved quantities, and the conserved quantities are orthogonal to the deviation. So that term goes away, and you get just this. Similar, here's just a Taylor expansion that gives you the flux of the exact thing. And the first contribution here is indeed the quadratic contribution in the dissipation rate. And if you just keep through these terms that are shown, you get exactly the dissipation relation seen on the previous, this one here. So what you can understand, this approximation is something that reconstructs an entropy relation through second order in the deviation, whereas Navier-Stokes does it kind of through first order. Now, with that said, I should comment that this system is a really ugly system in terms of being impractical. It, after all, is a linear kinetic equation with full space and time, and solving this as somehow a separate system is not at all practical. It seems like it's easier to solve a full Boltzmann equation. Rather, instead of viewing this as an approximation of any utility, we view it as a a theoretical stepping stone to the next approximation. All right, now, what's the material frame stationary balance approximation? Well, the small deviation approximation is, in the deviations at least, a linear kinetic equation. And it dissipates, as you see, an entropy. So it's dissipative. Now, when you have, in the forcing term, there's a 1 over epsilon term. So it's stiffly dissipative. So if you have a system that's stiffly dissipative, you can make a good temporal approximation just by putting things in what we call stationary balance. That is to say, you look at the stiff terms, and you set the right-hand side to 0, and then plug that back up into the slow dynamics. Okay, the trouble is if you do that just mindlessly, like I just said, you would break the Galilean invariance of the equations completely. So this is not a good idea. However, you don't have to change it too much. What you can do is go into the local material frame and make the same argument. And when you do that, this is the equation you get. That's the material frame stationary balance approximation. Instead of the operator one saw before, you get this operator, which is now just a spatial derivative operator. It does involve the bulk fluid velocity here, and that keeps the thing Galilean invariant, the whole thing Galilean invariant. If you now consider the coupling between this and the conservation law, you again get a system that dissipates entropy, in fact, only the Euler entropy. In fact, here's the Euler flux. There's the Navier-Stokes kind of flux. What you get is some added quadratic flux here. Notice the time derivative quadratic contribution goes away. As typical in stationary balance approximations, the sort of contribution of the fluctuation to the norm disappears, and that's what's going on here. And this is exactly as before. Okay. Yes, question. Nope.
No,
never.
It's not the parameter.
No. Bach numbers are big here. Can be. Doesn't have to be small. No, they can't be infinity. They have to be order 1. I'm scaling them as order 1, not as 1 over the Knudsen number. I can't think of problems with it. 1 over the Knudsen. Maybe astrophysics or some problems. All right. So, now, the small gradient expansion. What I do is I rewrite that stationary balance, the material frame stationary balance equation like this, and say I want to come up with solutions for the F tilde. I'm not happy with this because this is a spatial transport equation, which means that when I compute the F tilde, it's all coupled globally to the problem, and that is not acceptable for a fluid dynamic closure. So I want to do a small gradient expansion. And I can just treat this now as a Neumann series. This is a very simple expansion to do, far simpler than any Chapman-Enskog or Hilbert expansion, at least at this stage. This is more or less, you can think of this as, this will be good. This might mess up if there's any boundary conditions associated with this. But in the interior of the domain, this is the right thing to do. All right, now, what's the idea? The idea is now truncate this, all right? Now, the trouble is that you can't truncate it randomly. If you truncate it, if I count order by the number of times this operator A appears, so 0, 1, etc., then truncation here to leading order is the Navier-Stokes approximation. This truncation where I keep this term is actually still good. It gives me a closure that dissipates the entropy. In fact, you can show quite generally that this term leads to conservative terms in the fluid equations. However, the next one is bad. It leads to terms which actually do the wrong thing to the entropy. And the one after that doesn't help matters. It's also conservative, so it doesn't help remedy the problems of the previous one. However, the next term, the closure at order 4, actually is good. And not only is the new term good, but it actually remedies the bad term from the two steps earlier. And in fact, you can show systematically that's the case. So it's 0, 1, 4, 5... what's the next power for? 8, I guess, 8, 9, etc. And as there, this is the number, this basically counts the number of derivatives in the A. There are two more derivatives in the problem, So the closures have spatial derivatives of order 2, 3, 6, 7, etc. Okay. So, what do these look like? Well, I'll try and give you a hint of it. So, fluid systems, this is just the slide I had earlier. What I'm focusing on is the closure. I just recall for you the A and the B from before at its moments of the F tilde with A and B that give you the corrections to the momentum equation and the energy equation. All right, so for example, if you want the Navier-Stokes form, here's the Navier-Stokes approximations. The way you get the fluid equations involves quantities I'll call A hat and B hat, which are solutions of this linear system that are actually, I don't say it here, but they're chosen to be orthogonal to the fluid moments. And that makes them uniquely defined. And therefore, by using Galilean symmetry, you can see that actually the A hat, which is a matrix that's traceless, has to be proportional to the A. And there's a scalar proportionality. Similarly, the B hat is a vector, and it's proportional always to B. And when tau B is this function of proportionality. These functions, by Galilean invariance, are functions of V minus U, as well as possibly rho and theta in each case. In fact, if you have a quadratic collision operator, you can write down the rho dependence quite explicitly and factor it out. Okay. One finds that the P tilde is order epsilon in that small gradient expansion, like so. And if you plug in the forms I had and grind away, you get the classical formulas for the viscosity and the thermal conductivity that I've recalled here. Now, why did I recall them here? I recall them here to make a point. The point is that notice that this term here is an average of the tau. The tau is a relaxation time, if you wish. And so you can read the units off. This has the good units. Just understand that as some average of the tau. Similarly, this guy is an average of the tau as well, the different tau. That's tau A, that's tau B. And they're slightly different averages. Okay, brace yourselves. So now, if I go to the next order, the epsilon squared, to get the first correction, it turns out that the first correction terms can be split into two terms, one corresponding to an A in the momentum, one coming from an AA product, one from an AB product, and similarly here a BA and a BB product. All right, so let's look at the first one, this guy here. Well, this doesn't look too bad. I've swept some details under the rug in that you have to work out what this is, but remember, this only depends on you, so I get some additional gradients of U here due to that. You can work that out and pull the gradients out, and you see this involves something that involves a tau A squared. In other words, there's no new relaxation functions you need to evaluate this term. You do have to take just different moments of power, the tau somehow. All right, the AB term I'll do more explicitly. Now, this is interesting. Remember, this P sits under a divergence. So now you see this object has a divergence multiplying it, and there's another gradient here. So this will introduce third derivatives into the fluid equation, and this is in the momentum equation. And the gradients are all of the temperature, basically. These here, except you can pick up other terms here that I've swept under the rug for the moment. So these terms turn out to be third derivative terms. These are quadratic terms in derivatives. And finally, the Q again decomposes into its two parts. Again, you have something that has a divergence here and second derivatives here and first derivatives here. So these terms here have third derivatives, somehow mixing derivatives of U will have third derivatives when you take the divergence of this, mixing up derivatives of U and theta in some way. And here's the other term. This is just algebraic and quadratic in gradients. This one's also quadratic in gradients. Okay. So that's what they look like. What's the condition? Let me just make some remarks. When you simplify this using the Galilean symmetries, it turns out you only introduce four new transport coefficients into the problem. One involves averages of the tau relaxation function squared. One involves the tau b, tau a, tau b squared. And then there are two different averages of the product tau ab. Okay? So basically, you compute those. And you can check that this correction, remember when you look at the Navier-Stokes correction and compute, what is this combination of things? This is the combination of things for the entropy production, for the Euler entropy. And what you want it to be is divergence plus something less than or equal to zero. And indeed, you get that this thing explicitly is less than or equal to zero for Navier-Stokes. And so you want to see that this thing has the same form. And what you see, you can see, is that this thing is a pure divergence. That is to say, all those terms I showed you, when you just do this algebraic manipulation, they combine, and you get things that, a lot of things just vanish, and the others, involving only two of the transport coefficients, combine into a pure divergence. All right, so that's more or less the system as I want to introduce it to you. Let me just summarize by saying there are no theorems yet other than the formal theorem calculation I've done. There are no boundary conditions. This is a problem. However, there's hope for boundary conditions. I'll make a remark here. In fact, in some sense, there's more of a systematic hook to hang boundary conditions on than there is for, say, the Chapman-Enskog expansion, although it's very comparable in spirit to the Hilbert expansion in terms of boundary conditions. Let's talk about the boundary conditions. This is a transport operator in space. As such, you have boundary conditions for it that naturally it inherits from above. If you view this as just the interior solution of this driven problem, you can formally try and do a boundary layer analysis and see if you can systematically derive boundary conditions. Now, at the level of Navier-Stokes, this makes a lot of sense. I haven't done it for the first correction, and I'm not quite sure what to make of that just yet. So that's the boundary condition. So basically, I'm putting this out as something that has to be thought about analytically. There's interest in whether these new dispersive terms for fluid dynamics somehow can work with the dissipation terms and allow you to actually say something better than you can for just the pure compressible Navier-Stokes system. In other words, can we play off dispersive regularization with dissipative regularization and somehow gain something? This isn't so clear to me how to do it at all, but I think it's worth thinking about. Anyway, I stop and wish you all a good lunch.